I have pictures of my favorite breakfast place. Got my picture taken the day after the draft. We were headed out there on a Saturday morning, and they took the sign down.
The John Schneider Show on Wyman and Bob. Every Thursday until draft day.
Can I pick the seventh round pick? He's like, oh, absolutely. And we got around to it, and just Julian Edelman, and I'm like, sweet, we're going to pick Julian Edelman. And he's like, no, I was just kidding, man.
With Seahawks general manager John Schneider.
Well, we are still waiting for the GM to show up. Perhaps they're wheeling and dealing upstairs right now.
Maybe they're signing a linebacker.
Well, I read you that tweet that Devin Bush was apparently in town today, paying a visit to the Seahawks. So we'll see. Oh, well, here we go. Just on the mark right here. Hop on over here. We got the John Schneider pulling up right now. We're going to have to pot him up on the board over there if we could and get some volume going there. Dave's playing engineer right now, hopping over there. I think it's number three. Go ahead, John.
Gentlemen.
There he is.
Bob.
There he is. How are you, man?
Did you get that? It's a Brett Favre joke right there. Gentlemen. John, how you doing?
Starting out with a joke.
Yeah, no, I was just, yeah.
How are you doing?
Drew Lock, man. Let's go. Yeah, coming back.
Oh,
he's got
it done?
Drew Lock, yeah. He's coming back, yeah.
Breaking news, yeah, Drew Lock. Is that Austin, where you were? You were up there finalizing the deal with Drew Lock?
Yes, just got done.
Very nice. What can you give terms? One year, two years?
Yeah, no. No.
All right.
No. No. What a great guy, though. I'm really excited. You know,
you really can't give terms, huh?
No, I can't. You'll read about it here in a minute. It'll be like, it'll be like $7 million more than it really is.
It'll be a 9-year deal worth, okay.
No, what a awesome guy, you know. Everything he's been through last year, we talked about it a bunch. Coming here, you know, competing with Chino, getting COVID, you know, that really bad timing for him. But
that was game three. That was going to be his game to
game
start.
Game two was going to be his game against Chicago here.
Okay.
And then he got really sick. And then, you know, he still didn't have his legs.
That's right. We only have three
Dallas.
Games now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, just really excited. Really happy for him.
Seemed like he was a really supportive guy as far as Geno. I mean, always there. And that's got to be tough as a backup quarterback. I think it's one of the toughest positions in the league.
Yeah.
You don't get reps and things like that. But he seems like a guy that was all in to be the backup.
No, he was great. You know, and both those guys were awesome with, you know, pushing each other and then the support that they showed. You know, Geno's scrimmage and Drew's scrimmage, Drew had a little bit more success that day. You know, I forget exactly how it happened, but Geno was amazing afterwards. He's like, hey, look, you know, I'm here for Drew. And you know, if he's the guy, I'm here to support him. And obviously Drew was, you know, the same way, treated Geno the same way and was great all throughout the season and competing. And, you know, he knows how much we love him. He knows how important it was you know, both their exit interviews were great. So, yeah, really excited.
Well, I've got the terms of the deal here if you need them, according to Mike Garofalo. Says they've agreed to terms with quarterback Drew Lock on a one-year deal worth $4 million base with incentives that can take it to $7.5 million, sources say.
Yeah, fairly close, Mike.
how often do you go through whether it's Schefter or Garofalo or Rappaport, how often do you go through and go, Wrong.
Well,
it just
shows up on the ticker, and they're maxing their value, and they should. You know, it's a you know, you don't want to. You know, if you're an agent, you're not going to want to sit there and say, you know, hey, you know, on the low end of things,
right?
Yeah, I mean, at the very, you know, this is my base, and you know, I can build it to here, and that's why NFL contracts are so interesting and complex because you know the guaranteed money isn't there, so there's so many different avenues to add to the contract and negotiate and. Yeah, there's all kinds of different silos you have to take care of.
Hey, let me ask you about the process as far as free agency goes. And Draymond Jones.
Yeah.
And were you looking at him last year?
Yeah, so Dre, I guess it's Dre. I was told today it's Dre. It's like Kenneth Walker. Yeah, it's like Ken now. Yeah, so
yeah.
Dre. Yeah, so met Dre today. Huge, like, you know.
Big grips.
Hands, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I met him before, like, what, 4 years ago, but... yeah, really impressive looking dude. So what about, I'm sorry, I forgot
that. But he was a guy that...
My mind's like,
yeah.
Well, I'm on fire right now.
He's fired up. Yeah. This Drew Lock thing got him going.
Yeah. Well, I mean, was there any chance you guys were looking at him for when the trade happened last year?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking they were maybe, well, how about Shelby Harris? I mean, you don't have to tell us.
Yeah, we talked about a bunch of guys, and he was one of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
and they were not willing to part with him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were able to... How much is that help? Free agency. So the aspects of free agency, right? So, you know, we're negotiating with, you know, several defensive linemen. Let me reverse. There's so many different phases to a free agency. The first day, you know, we pride ourselves on being involved in all these deals and then making a decision on, well, okay, it's gotten to this point. Are we in? Are we out? Are we going to, you know, how far are we going to keep going? We knew that we really wanted to address our defensive line. And so we're still trying to do that. We're working with a number of different guys right now, talking to a number of different players and helping our defensive line and defense and everything. So, but, you know, you have that first day that is really like, you know, phase one. So it's really intense. It's, you know, you're competing against other teams. You don't know what's truly real or not real. And, you know, it's not like you can call up another team and be like, hey, did you really offer that? Or is this guy, you know, is the agent full of horse doo-doo or what? You know, so, you know, you're constantly in these negotiations and, you know, you're negotiating against other teams. So those guys' markets just, you know, they rise throughout the day. And so, you know, either you're going to sign the guy and go for it or you're not. And, you know, you get to certain levels where you have to dip out. And then, you know, then everybody's markets kind of, you know, tend to, well, then you have players that are, you know, coming out once the cap casualty guys that are coming out, once everybody comes to, once they have to balance their books for the salary cap when the new league year starts, then you see, now you see more names start popping up as salary cap casualty guys and you want to still, you know, keep some of your powder dry, as Ted Thompson would say. You want to, you know, save some of your money to be able to negotiate with those guys too. But generally, you know, the longer free agency goes, the markets tend to, you know, really by position dictate, you know, what's going on. And so we try to balance that out with what's going on with our team and, you know, what we can afford and what our budget is, you know, how we've identified, you know, certain budget, like per position.
As far as guys you're looking at, how far in advance are you looking at, like, even next year's crop going, well, that guy's going to be a free agent and he's going to be a free agent. How far in advance are you looking towards upcoming free agents that, I guess you don't always know what your needs are going to be, but do you kind of have your eye on guys way in advance?
Yeah. When we start, you know, training camps, really, you know, when we start going to preseason games, when the scouts start going out, the pro scouts start going to preseason games, or some of the college guys going out to preseason games, they'll know who the upcoming free agents are and, you know, really pay attention to them on a live look. You know, if we see them, when we go to games and we're playing guys, we're like, okay, you know, focus in, you know, in the pregame just to, you know, size them up and see, you know, see how they're doing, see how they're interacting with their teammates and everything. And you're watching that, you know, all throughout the year. I would say, like, with Evan Brown, you know, It was really cool. We had our free agent meetings end of December, early January, and he was the guy that really stood out. You know, that Willie and DJ and Armani and Nolan, those guys really, you know, focused on, like, hey, look, like, this is a guy that, you know, he's been playing guard, excuse me, but he's ideally a center. You know, he started 47 or 48 games at SMU at center, and then, you know, he started 2 years at Detroit. He was a center, and then they had to move him to guard. You know, they have a really good center right now, so he's playing guard. So he can play both, but he's really truly a center. And so it was pretty cool to be able to identify that guy and kind of watch the process go. And then kept negotiating with him, and he's represented by a guy named Drew Pittman, who's a really good agent, really good guy. So we just kind of, you know, focused on staying in touch with him and watching that center market go.
Let's talk about the most important position on the field, linebacker. Where are you guys with that? You lost Cody to the Commanders for a year, and how pressing of a need is that? Any updates on
it's
on
a
that?
Need. It definitely is a need, Dave. You know, I'd be lying to you if it wasn't. It's a position that, when you look at free agency and the draft, not based on talent levels or performance, but there's just pure more numbers there. So you really have to focus in other areas where there's less numbers, because it just dries up that much. You know, things just go much quicker at that position. This year you've had some linebackers kind of go out earlier, take some deals, right, wrong, and different. That's up to them. We're really happy for Cody. You know, excited for him. He's going to be, you know, starting at Mike for the Commanders now. So, you know, we love him and wish him all the best. We'll, you know, be rooting for him. But, Linebacker is really a position on, you know, you come across the table here and kick my butt or something, but like he's looking like he wants to kill me right now. No, it's just like
get a guy off the street.
No, that's linebacker. No, that's not true. See, now you're going somewhere that we weren't supposed to go or we weren't headed. But it's just a position where it's just there's numbers there. Now what has happened and is happening this year is, you know, guys are taking guys have jumped out and said, hey, you know, if I'll take such and such a deal at such and such a level if you guys are ready to jump, which it's like, okay, so now you're competing with other teams for guys that, you know, are ready to sign quicker. And, you know, their agents are, you know, probably ahead of the game, because they're basically saying, hey, look, I don't want this market to get any worse. I don't want people's cash to dry up, their cap to dry up. I better get out there and get on it right now. So, long-winded answer, yes, it is an area of concern for us, but our defense is in general, we're trying to upgrade. I apologize. We're trying to improve our defense anywhere we possibly can right now and add competition to the whole group.
Hey, we talked to you before, and you talked about having conversations with Bobby Wagner, and we talked about just bringing guys back.
Yeah.
You did it with Jaren Reed.
Yeah.
Jaren Reed comes back. Is that a conversation that was happening, you know, a while ago, and you're just keeping an eye on it, or was that kind of like, hey, this guy's a free agent, and we know him, and we know what he brings?
Yeah, great question. You know, having drafted somebody like that, you're always – you know, it's like you're always loving the guy up and you know, we didn't want him to go. He made a business decision. We had to make a business decision. He had to respond. He decided to go to Kansas City. That's his prerogative. You know, he went to KC and he was in Green Bay and he's done. I mean, he started 14 games last year. He played great. And so, you know, it's one of those deals where, again, you have that relationship. He knows, you know, he knows Stu upstairs in the cafeteria real well. He knows EK, Mo, like all these guys, yeah. Dave, Pierce, he knows everybody. And so our culture really, you know, attracts him. And, you know, could he gone somewhere else for more money? Absolutely. Did he want to come back here? And you know, like do what, you know, be part of a special thing that we're building right now and that, you know, help us get over the top. Yeah. You want to do it now. He was down the hall. I heard him bashing Green Bay this morning. I was like, hey, slow down, man. Like, I grew up in Green Bay. You back off, big fella. Well, he looked great, though. He looked great. He was all fired up. So well, it was pretty cool to see those two guys in the building today.
Yeah, and you do a good job, you and Pete both, about not burning any bridges. I mean, somebody leaves, whatever. You know, it's always a good relationship, and they want to come back.
Yeah, it's hard, Dave. I mean, it's hard when guys leave. There's no, like, real, like, okay, what's the smoothest way to, you know, have a exit strategy. It's never
a little awkward.
Yeah, it's never great. And when you focus on relationships and it's really important to you, how you try to take care of everybody and how everybody in the building's taking care of the players and supporting the players as much as they possibly can, it's always really tough. It's tough for everybody. So there's no easy way to, you know, to say, hey, look, we're gonna move on. Like, we all gotta go our separate ways. But the cool thing is, like, you know, like, I walked down the cafeteria yesterday and, you know, Cliff and Michael Benner in there grabbing lunch, you know what I mean? It was awesome. Got
you still let him in the building, huh?
Oh, yeah. I keep him away from my office, but
yeah.
Let him in the building. No.
Hey,
I've had some interesting conversations with Michael Bennett in my office.
Yeah, oh, no, I'm sure.
No, he's a blast. What a great guy. So he's in town with a girl, so it's pretty cool soon.
I was asking Dave this. I'm curious your response. Are there positions you look at on the field that you say, I'm more like, it's easier to address this position with a rookie as opposed to a vet? In this position, no, I need somebody that's got experience. I can't put a rookie. Like, we were talking about center.
Yeah,
we were talking about,
absolutely.
Boy, do you want a rookie center versus a veteran center or linebacker? Some seem like they favor a younger guy versus a guy with experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can go through the positions and rank them, sure. Yeah, there's positions that where you're, you know, you'd say, you know, running back, your natural instincts are going to just take over, you know, so you can play with a younger guy there. Center, you have to have the right brain. That guy's got to be able to communicate with the rest of his, you know, offensive linemen, with a unit, making a cohesive group, as well as working with the quarterback. And so, you know, that has to be a special brain. Those guys have to function at a certain level. But yeah, for sure, it's different by position, you know. And you know, like with receivers too. I mean, you see a lot of receivers come in that are really, really talented. And you're like, man, I thought that guy was a takeoff a little quicker. Well, you know, it's the route tree and the adjustments in the National Football League are a lot more sophisticated than they are in college football.
Your pro days schedule is coming up here, and you know, I've always said I feel like, you know, the combine is a there's more competition going there, whereas, you know, you do it at your own place and it's like you have your own receivers to throw the ball and stuff. And I would think maybe a little bit of an edge as far as, you know, the combine performance versus a pro day performance. But tell me I'm wrong, or, you know, what do you find out at pro day?
Similar to, you know, what you're just asking, you know, it depends on the position. You know, the quarterbacks, you like to see them, you know, throw at the combine with, you know, different timing receivers and everything and how they're adjusting the ball, like the release, where, you know, the ball, natural ball carriage for them, and, you know, how they're stepping through and holding the ball. Anyway, release, all that kind of stuff. But then when you see them at their pro day, it's scripted. It's all the receivers they've been throwing with all the time. Right. So things tend to look, you know, they tend to look nicer, you know, so. You know, next week, you know, we'll see Alabama, we'll see Ohio State, we'll see Kentucky. You know, it'll be really interesting to see if those guys are, if they're running their own, you know, if their quarterback, you know, coach or guru guy or whatever is running their workout, or if they're doing it themselves, or, it's going to be really interesting to see all those guys and how they handle themselves in a, like, and to your point, like in a real comfortable environment.
Yeah, and really quick, just in general, how many do you go to a year? I know you probably don't have your schedule yet, but.
Well, we haven't, our schedule's all set, but having the fifth pick in the draft is, you know, we gotta go see these guys throw in person and see, you know, talk to more coaches, get more questions answered. Just, you know, trying to figure out the whole, like we talked about last week, like the whole movie, like, you know, we're in, you know, like maybe halfway through the movie right now. How's it going to turn out?
Obviously the big news around the draft and the combine is Jalen Carter. I don't expect you to comment on him specifically. But when that comes out in public and you know, A, the story of what happened, then we hear about his workout and, oh, he's breathing heavy, couldn't make it through the workout. I feel like these are things you already maybe knew in advance. Maybe we find out about it, certainly the incident, but even hearing about, we were hearing the guy's not in shape, or maybe he's not ready for this workout, or are those things you tend to hear prior to all of us hearing about it when things like that go on?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of you know, our area scout's responsibility, and those guys do a great job of it, of you know, talking to every source they possibly can that they trust, everybody that they feel like, okay, you know, I'm getting a really good feel for this guy. And when we meet before the combine, those are our long meetings where we put our board together for the first time. We're building a list of questions that we need to get answered, and they lay it all out there, and they have as much character information as they possibly can, but also knowing that we have a lot more to get answered throughout the spring and before the draft. You know, sometimes, you know, in certain situations, you want to see how a guy, you know, is the guy, to your point, like, is he a good worker? Is he not a good worker? Is he in shape? Is he not in shape? Is he in better shape than the coaches said, or all sources said at the school? Or, you know, how do they, wow, this guy was more, you know, wasn't as impressive as the coaches said he was. Yeah. Right. So there's like this whole puzzle you're trying to figure out, like, all throughout the process. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, situations off the field, we have a whole, you know, George Engelbreit does a great job of, you know, researching that with, well, I'm not gonna tell you. I started talking too much there. Yep. Good job, though.
You're making Pearson good. Nervous yeah. over that here, man. Yeah.
George does a great job.
You were gonna say Dave Love and
Billy, all those guys. But I think those guys do a great job of investigating everything we possibly can.
Now, your scouts, I mean, we always talk about this like it sounds kind of cliche, but they do go and talk to trainers and equipment guys and things like that. I mean, that's pretty much standard procedure, right?
Definitely.
You're not just looking at film and looking at the kid on the sidelines. You're actually, they're going in depth.
Yeah, academic counselors, any advisors that, you know, you can talk to. Yeah, we try to be as, you know, the guys know they're the experts in their area. We don't do what's called cross checking. So, So we, our guys have a specific area, you know, like, and so say you have the Northeast and the Midwest. You're the expert in the Midwest. You go through there as much as you possibly can. You're the expert in the Northeast. You go through there as much as you possibly can. I've been with, clubs that cross check. So like they would go through there. The one guy would go through the Northeast, and then when he got done with his area, he would go to the Midwest and cross check the other guy. Well, we don't do that. We, you keep going into school. Try to go into school, big schools, 3-4 times, and try to get, you know, try to get as much information as you can. And then guys like, you know, Matt Berry, Trent Kirshner, Nolan, myself, Aaron Heinlein, we'll go in over the top, you know, and we'll do the cross check, if you will. So our guys do a great job of being the expert in their area. It's like on the pro side, when I've talked to you guys, I think about, you know, when we split up the teams, you know, we always say, hey, Bob, if you're responsible for the NFC, Dave, you're responsible for the AFC. You guys are the experts on those teams. You're the general manager for all those teams, and you're the general manager for those teams. And then, you know, you're expected to know, okay, why they're making specific moves or who they could go to, you know, as a cap casualty move or who they might be trading or, you know, who's coming up as a free agent, like you were talking about earlier, like who should we really be studying? So what are their strengths? What are their deficiencies? And then, you know, when we get together before the draft, you know, they'll present to the whole room about, look, okay, this team, strengths, weaknesses, strengths, you know, like, and so that's all in our draft room. We can see it.
Is there a different level of, I don't know if intensity is the right word or focus. You guys are typically picking at the bottom of the first round because you've been successful. You got a number 5 pick. This is the highest you guys have been in terms of a pick since you've been here. So is there a different level of, all right, guys, we got to get this right. Maybe you don't take a chance on a player there that you would take a chance on at 26 or 25. There's a different urgency to get number 5 right versus, all right, if we're picking at 26, yeah, we're still doing our research and doing our due diligence. Yeah. But if it doesn't work, it's not as punitive as if we miss on number 5.
Yeah, I know where you're headed. Yeah, there's different shelves all throughout the draft. There's different levels and there's like cutoffs. So, you know, to your point, we haven't picked up here since we drafted Russell, Okun and Earl. And so you're studying, you're preparing. There's more in-depth study of those players that, you know, you have to cover all those players.
Right.
You have to be ready for those players when you're picking at, like, you know, 25, 28, 22, you know, I mean, just because there's 32, you know, first round slots, that doesn't mean there's 32 first round players every year.
Right.
You know, some years you might have 34, some years you might have 16 or 12 or whatever, you know, it depends on the class. So yeah, it's not a intensity. It's more like a thoroughness. We have to be more thorough on those players, at the top of the draft because we don't necessarily know how it's going to fall. And quite honestly, we're not used to, you know, the interaction up there. When you're talking about, intensity, there's a level of, you know, those draft choices, you know, I mean, you move down those slots. I think, you know, if you move from, say, you know, from, where was Carolina? 9? Yeah, they were 9, at 9 and Chicago went to 9. So if we were to trade with Scott Fitter with Carolina, you go from 5 to 9. That's an $8 million swing in cash, right? Mm-hmm. So those are that part. I think you're right. You know, I think that's where you're headed. There's like this, like when you're trading up to these different tiers of players, it's like, okay, is that guy really worth that? Is this player worth that?
Yeah.
And how do you maneuver in there? Yeah, we haven't done that. We're not used to that.
Unfortunately,
we're learning on the way. Okay. So we're studying it and trying to figure it out and be on top of everything. When Fit did that trade last week, I was like, hey, you know, like I need to make more calls, man. I'm like, what's going on, Scott? Like, I was just with you for a week and you didn't say a word about that. He's like, I'm not going to tell you that. I'm like, oh, God, man, let's go.
He learned.
I thought we were boys. Yeah.
He learned from the master.
Yeah, shoot.
You don't say a darn thing.
Shoot.
Yeah, I'm sure you've had plenty of times to like fill out a bracket for the NCAA tournament or anything like that.
I was rooting for Tony Bennett, you know, Green Bay guy, and they got beat today. So
yeah,
that was, and then yeah. Marquette. I'm rooting for Marquette.
You know, yeah, there you go.
My parents went to Marquette. So other than that, no, not really at all.
Are you going to drop a movie line on us? Or are you going to? No pressure, but
really,
you know, you hit us with Wedding Crashers last week, right?
You know what? Wedding Crashers, yeah. You know what?
Dave did
crab cakes and football, baby.
Crab cakes and football. Yeah,
that's how we do it.
Your wife's favorite is...
No, we can't say my wife's favorite, no.
Oh, no, it's clean.
It is?
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
That's okay to say?
Of course.
Okay. Okay.
John.
All right, fellas.
We appreciate it always, man.
Gentlemen, Bob.
Nice. Nice.
I like that.
Okay, good.
Making sure I got that one.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
See you guys.
Thanks, John. We appreciate you, man. There you go. John Schneider with us every week here live from the VMAC. Always a fun conversation with him. Coming up, a lot of great stuff we'll talk about, go over that we just had here with John Schneider. That is coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Our thanks to Seahawks GM John Schneider, who joined us in the previous segment. In case you guys are just tuning in, that conversation will be available on the podcast page at seattlesports.com. I would definitely check that one out. Boy, he sat down. He was just shot out of a cannon. He was fired up, a lot of energy. He was super excited. And we found out before we even asked a question, they re-signed Drew Locke to a one-year deal.
He gets so fired up for those kinds of things. That's his deal. And, you know, getting, especially when it goes the right way, it seems like they really love Drew Locke. And, yeah, and like I talked to him about it, it was amazing how supportive he was on the sidelines to Geno, and just seems like a good team. And I know Moyer doesn't trust that because, you know, he's always like...
He doesn't trust what?
Oh, the backup quarterback helping the guy in front of him. Because
he thinks there's an ulterior motive going on
there. No, he was just joking about... And I'm kind of with him on this. Like, if there's a guy that's drafted and he's coming in to take your job, there's a certain point in your career you're like, okay, I'll take the guy under my wing. Keith Butler.
Yeah.
When I came in, he was like in his 10th year.
He told you were there to take his job.
Yeah, and he had his two front teeth were silver.
Yeah, the bottle cap teeth.
Yeah, and, you know, he couldn't bend his wrist back, and he was, you know, a mess. But if it's, you know, you're in your third year, fourth year, I mean, there was a couple of guys. There was a guy in Denver, and I was like, I'm not helping that guy.
But it's not my job.
Quarterback's different.
Well, and it's I don't think it's that surprising. I think, you know, we knew Drew Locke was a free agent. I was having a conversation with a buddy about this, like, boy, what do you think? Where's Drew Locke going to land? There going to be a lot of teams that are into him, right? And I'm like, no, why? He did nothing this year to hurt the perception of him or help it. I mean, he didn't play. So whatever anybody thought about him last year, I would assume is what they think of him this year, other than maybe they think, well, he was awfully supportive of Geno. I mean, he didn't do anything that would create more desire, in my opinion, from an opposing GM to say, we need to go out and get that guy. He's a free agent. There was nothing, there was no film to watch. There was nothing to say, we can turn this guy into something special based on what we witnessed, because you didn't witness anything.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, though. I do feel like if he had been named the starter, there's a better chance than not that we're talking about. I'm not going to say that he made the Pro Bowl anything, but I think we would have been very surprised.
Yeah, I'm not. This is even about how good he is or isn't.
No, I know.
Is he more appealing now all of a sudden because he's a free agent? I'm like, well, no, I don't think he is.
Yeah, to other teams.
Yeah, because there was nothing for them to get excited about. So
when you look at the preseason, I mean.
Yeah, and he got sick, and it's just he was with a new team. So, yeah, I just didn't think there would be a big, you know, feeding frenzy. Everybody's competing. That's not a shot.
But I'm just thinking, you know, alternate reality. Let's say he doesn't get COVID, whatever.
He gets that start in the second game.
Maybe lights it up in the rest of the preseason. And, you know, we're talking about Drew Locke. And, you know, I remember when we were talking through that whole thing, I was thinking, I'm more worried if Geno becomes the backup than because Geno had tweeted a couple of things and thinking it was, you know, his time. And I don't know that. You know, maybe he would have been a good backup. I'm sure he was a good backup to Russell. But I'll say this. I wouldn't be a good backup. I think I would have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
You know, everybody believes in themselves and feels like they can play.
Now, does this change your opinion at all about, because we're speculating, number 5 overall pick, maybe they still may love one of these quarterbacks. Does this change their approach? Does it change your opinion on whether they draft a quarterback?
A little bit. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Drew Lock can be one of those guys that you develop, and someday he becomes a Geno Smith. Can you believe we're saying that? He's a future Geno Smith. But, yeah, I do. I think it's – I feel like they're set at quarterback. But who knows? I mean, they do different things, and maybe they get in there and it's Richardson or, you know, I don't know. It just, to me, seems very much much less likely.
Because it's only a one-year deal for Drew. So yeah. It's not like we got this long commitment, so that really sort of eliminates any reason to go out and get another quarterback. It's 1 year. He's on a one-year deal. And technically with Geno, if they want to get out of it at the end of this year, they can. So they're in a position technically, contractually, where if they want to go after one of these young guys, and I'm not saying they do, but if they have a passion for one of them or they're excited about one of them, they're not like, well, now what do we do? Because we're locked in for millions and millions and millions of dollars for years to come with these guys. They're not. So technically, they're in a position where they've got flexibility. If they really had a strong feeling about one of these quarterbacks, that they could bring them in and not feel like, well, we've screwed this up by signing these contracts. They're not in a position like with, you know, the contracts that we've seen some of these other teams sign with quarterbacks.
Yeah, and I think this clears the way for them to just hopefully go heavy on defense. You know, and that's really, other than center, I mean, you got your quarterback signed. There's a little bit of question there at tight end. I'd be okay with Phil Haynes. And, you know, I think you and I both, maybe I had him on the second tier. But, I feel like that they're cleared the path to maybe go get linebackers, interior defensive linemen, and then, you know, maybe a guard. Who knows? But, yeah, it's interesting with Drew Lock, and I do think he's a pretty good player, and I do have a lot of confidence that if the Seahawks had to go with him, that they would be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I mean, I like seeing how excited he is. That's not an act. He came in here just fired up. So everything they've said about him, I take him at his word. All right. Coming up, Aaron Rodgers is frustrated about one specific thing in terms of how the Packers have treated him. We'll hear about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, this is Seattle Sports on 710.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
We've talked about the madness happening so far. Virginia may be on the worst end of it. Well, before that, lost by Arizona. But they lost in perhaps the worst way. A late three with 2 seconds left to Furman. And Tony Bennett broke down everything. They went wrong at the end there.
The pass at the end, you know, we missed a front end of a bonus. We missed, made one out of two. So there were some free throws that could have salted that away. And, you know, I'll have to see on tape how it all played out. But, again, it's that feeling of it's there. I think we're going on to the second round or the whatever round we call it now, and then it's gone. And that's a gut punch.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this is a guy who's lived the extremes, Dave. He's the coach of the first number one seed to lose to a 16 seed, and then the very next year wins the entire shooting match out there. And then, you know, so, I mean, he's kind of an all-or-nothing guy, and this year ended up being a lot of nothing, and I saw his name trending on Twitter, which means people are mad at him.
Yeah.
And they're upset, and that game featured what Lefko called the worst pass in the history of the NCAA tournament. There are a lot of passes, Dave. That's weird. That's the worst one.
Well, I guess that Mike had the Cavaliers advancing, but, yeah, I guess he was in – the kid was panicked, and, you know, like they were saying on the broadcast, he should have chucked it, like, way up in the air, and he just didn't. But, I mean, that fell right into their hands. And the kid who took the three, he wasn't the best three-point shooter, and he just buried it. I like that the whole thing got started off that way, because I was in my bonus room screaming, you know, because I picked Furman, and – yeah, I don't know. I just think it's a good way to start it. Sorry, Tony Bennett, but, you know, that's what
you're
the
not that sorry.
March Madness is all about.
You're not that sorry.
You know, I love Green Bay. I love the fan.
Oh, well, I was going to just fire that
shut
one
up, Aaron.
Yeah, well, that's what we're getting to in a second here.
Sweeping the dial.
So, a little teaser there. Yes, so Aaron Rodgers... when he was on with Pat McAfee, he said the Packers, well, he's upset that they weren't direct in telling him in his words, that they wanted to move on.
You know, I love Green Bay. I love the fan base. They're incredible. I live for playing, playing for them and for Lambeau. A lot of love for the organization. I just think I wish that in the beginning of the offseason, that had been the conversation. Because I love direct communication. If they had just said, listen, we think it's time to move in a different direction. And we love you. And you're going to be a Packer Hall of Famer. You're going to go in the hall as a Packer. We're going to, you know, retire your number, whatever it might be. You know, but it's time to move on. I would have said, man, thank you so much just for telling me that. Like, I really, really appreciate that. That means the world to me that you would tell me that. Because I really believe that's a sentiment, and that's fine.
Now, does he have an agent? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Does Aaron Rodgers have an
agent? Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. But my question to you would be, do you think Tom Brady, have we ever heard Tom Brady say anything like that?
Not to my knowledge.
That I'll be going into the Hall of Fame.
Retire my number, whatever. You want to name your kids after me? That'd be great. Yeah. That'd be great. A statue? Yeah. You see a statue out front of me? Okay, that's perfect. That all sounds like it's earned. He's a different dude. And the expectation that they were going to come to him in the offseason prior to this season, in year one of his three-year $150 million extension that he signed, that they were going to go, you know, we just signed you to that $150 million three-year deal. I think we're going to move in another direction at the end of the season. What? Mm-hmm. That's your expectation? That's what you wanted them to say? I think the uncertainty on their part seemed to happen when you became uncertain and had to go into your darkness retreat and figure out whether you wanted to play again or not. So let's not, you know, try to turn the tables and make you the victim here. God, my goodness.
Do you think he was weird to begin with? Because he did go to Cal.
Yeah, I think he's just gotten weirder.
Yeah, do you think all the money and the fame? And
yeah, I think he's a curious guy. I think he is a smart person, but I think he's a curious guy.
He's a peculiar fellow.
Yeah, he is a peculiar little fellow.
Is that the word they used? I think it was Guttenkus that he said he's a...
I don't know if he called him a... Yeah, something alike. I can't remember what that was.
Interesting fellow. Yeah. Something like that. But yeah, what a... I don't know. Maybe, I mean, look, it's like pouring gas on a fire.
You're going to go into the Hall of Fame. We're going to retire your number. I mean,
you throw a bunch of money at him, a bunch of fame, and then it gets really, really, really weird.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, John Morant's been suspended. At first it was just going to be 2 games. Then he was away from the team, and now the NBA has suspended him 8 games. But he was being interviewed by Jalen Rose about his suspension, and Jalen asked him, you know, why he brought the gun out in the club, and when he was on that Instagram Live, and what he's learned since his time away from the team.
Pretty much just trying to be free. Use that as an escape, which I shouldn't have. And I feel like that's the reason, you know, I made many, you know, bad decisions, you know, in my past, which doesn't describe Jai as a person. You know, I'm a totally different person, you know, than what's been shown, you know, in the media. I feel like in the past, we didn't know what was at stake. And now, you know, finally me having that time to, you know, realize everything, have that time alone, I realize that now. I realize, you know, what I have to lose. You know, I can't wait to be back out there on the floor now, you know, knowing what my punishment is. And, you know, I accept that. And, you know, I feel like I deserve, you know, that punishment for, you know, my mistakes and, you know, what I did. But when I get back out there, you know, I'm going to be ready to go and ready, you know, push for a ring.
I don't know if you watched this. There's about 4 minutes of it on the video I sent you guys last night where, first of all, he went third person probably 4 or 5 times, which drove me nuts. But second of all, it sounded so rehearsed and insincere because Jalen asked him about each incident. Like, hey, there was a story about, you know, you guys after a game, you and your crew, and the red light lasers were being pointed, and blah, blah. And then there was a story with your sister and this, and then there was a story with your mom, and he was asking about each one, and he sort of qualified each one. Well, I showed up, and, you know, once I found out my mom was okay, then I left. And then, well, I showed up, I make sure my sister was okay, then I left. But I know it was a story because Ja was there, and so he was sort of qualifying. I didn't really, that wasn't my gun. That in one breath would say, yeah, I can't do that. I deserved it. And in another breath was basically saying, this isn't that big a deal. And I was there for very altruistic reasons.
You saw the video, right?
Yeah.
So Dave is wondering, Bob, what do you think that Ja has possibly, I mean, he realizes his mistakes or...
I think he's going to be more careful now when he does things. I don't think he's going to stop doing things. I didn't find him sincere. I found him to be trying to, on one hand, defend what he did and say, well, then that was proven to not be true, and that was proven to be, you know, and I did this, and I wasn't really doing that, but I accept the penalty. It was like, all right, dude. I feel like he's going to be somebody who probably ends up learning a tough lesson. Not this, that maybe he does something stupid again down the road.
I wonder who the person, Dave wonders who the person is that would actually, you know, have, is it his mom? Is it somebody that can step in and say, hey, and shake him? And
yeah.
Because if there's nobody, because that's the thing with Aaron Rodgers. Like, who's the person that steps in and tells him, like, you know, I still listen to my mom and dad.
Yeah.
You know, and the instruction part of it is over, you know, and it's too late for them. But, you know, I mean, there's...
You're not going to listen to that.
You know, I have my wife, you know, I have a lot of good friends. I mean, I wonder if for him and Aaron Rodgers, like, who is the person that that steps in and says, and shakes him?
Yeah, well, hopefully his situation's much more dire in that he's a young guy in his career. He's a star. He's an absolute stud of a player. He's got a lot more that's hanging in the balance. Aaron Rodgers is at the end of his career. He could not play another down, not collect another cent, and be fine for the rest of his life. Ja's not in that position. So, and he's doing things that might get him thrown into jail, might get somebody hurt. You know, you start messing around with guns and clubs and pointing them at buses, whether that was true or not, and then supposedly on a playground with somebody he's playing pickup ball with. There's too many of these things coming up for them not to be some truth to it.
Yeah.
You know, not everything's just a mistake of, I was just there to see, you know, make sure my family member was okay, and then I left. Okay, that's not how these stories have read, but, you know, and they're happening fairly often. It's just when you watch it, it felt very rehearsed. It felt very like, here's what I've been told to say by my agent. I'm going to say this, but then I'm going to kind of defend it at the same time. So there you go. All right, coming up, how far could Jalen Carter fall in that first round? We're going to talk about that and some hypothetical situations surrounding that as well. That's coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.